Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russ. How are you this evening?
Real good, real good. Nice day out in the neighborhood. 77 degrees, not necessarily hockey weather, but we're getting to the best time of the year where, you know, there's championships and playoffs on the line. Everything's coming full circle, so a fun time of the year.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to the upcoming month here. It's going to be a lot of good things coming up. We got Frozen Four coming soon, and
yep.
It's going to be pretty exciting.
It will. First part of the show, we're going to introduce Bill Keenan. Bill's on the line now. He's an author of a book called Odd Man Rush. He grew up in the New York area like I did. The only difference was he played hockey, and he had a really cool journey in the hockey world, played for Harvard, and then played overseas. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, anytime. I'll start off. I enjoyed your book. I enjoyed the foreword by Adam Graves, which, again, I guess, again, proves that, like, he might be the nicest guy in the world. He's just, he will talk to kids forever. And so if you could, let us know the impact he had on you just, you know, in your hockey career.
Well, I mean, he was, you know, the first guy that caught my eye when I started watching hockey, when I, you know, growing up and watching the Rangers. And for whatever reason, it was, he was always in the middle of things. It was, you know, if there was a big goal, he probably scored it. If there was a fight, he was probably a part of it. And it's a guy, I mean, as a little kid, it's kind of like the perfect type of role model to have. And then, of course, you know, he's got a whole other side of himself away from the rink that you don't really appreciate until you get a little bit older, which is, I mean, you know, so involved in the community. And like you said, he, you know, having met him a few times, it's, you know, there are some athletes out there that they have kind of a persona that they try to make sure they look a certain way. This guy, it's just, it's genuine. I mean, he is who he is, and there's, I mean, you see it's the small interactions he has with people that you know, kind of set him apart and you know, make him someone I certainly looked up to and still do.
So I got to ask the obvious question: as a kid growing up, obviously in Manhattan, right? And how did this love for hockey sort of start for you? Like from pretty, I mean, and you, I know you talk about obviously most pro players, you know, small, you know, Canadian towns and everything. Here you are in New York City. How did this passion for hockey begin for you?
You know, and I wish I had a good answer. I think. Now, that's where the odd man rush comes in, because I really don't have, you know, much. It's not like I had parents, you know, my dad is from Texas. Like, I don't, you know, he, you know, barely knew what hockey was. You know, there's a rink, and it's still there, Lasker Rink in Central Park North, which I guess, you know, I'd watched a couple games, and my dad figured, all right, we should probably get him out of the house at some point when I'm five, and I'm like creating chaos, breaking windows. So took me up there, and I, it's one of those things. I think some people, when they first skate, you either kind of fall in love, or it's like you fall down, and you know, the kid cries, and then he wants to get off the ice. And I happened to be in the camp where I just wanted to stay out there. I mean, I felt plenty, and I did plenty of crying, but I had fun doing it. So. It was just like anything, you try out a bunch of stuff, and for whatever reason, that kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, and you played for Harvard, and I wrote in a review I may have covered one of your games, because I go to a certain amount of Princeton games a year, and you got to play at Baker Rink, and you had a career where you played for Ted Donato, who I think is a real good coach. You said some really good things about him. You brought the reader inside as to, you know, how he coaches and everything else. And I think it was mostly positive. It was just realistic. But I did feel for you with injuries and how that could derail you and how it derailed you in your draft year. And I'm a guy who we're on the draft floor every year talking to the kids the minute they get off the podium. And in with their new team, and that's a lot of fun, and I get to sort of, you know, pick and see who's going to go where right before they get selected, and we have a good time with that. But it really, your book really points out how, like, the average player, boy, they really sort of go through a roller coaster just to sort of get scouted.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that you're the first person that's said that about kind of how I guess Donato was portrayed, and that means a lot, because the fact is it was realistic, and at the time, I think that was the experience of a lot of players, and I think it's not just in college hockey. I think it's in junior hockey, it's in professional hockey, where, I mean, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, whether you're, you know, fourth line winger or the first line center. And I mean, that's really what makes the whole thing a lot of fun, because, you know, every day is a chance to compete and try to work your way up. And then once you're up to continue to, like, stay at that level. But yeah, as far as, you know, it's easy to kind of the people that get the coverage, that, you know, McDavid's and Crosby's, that's kind of the people that you see in the news. But there's a whole other group of us that are just clawing to try to get noticed by somebody. And you know, to me, it was just trying to get to Division I college, which, you know, it you know, you gotta get hope to God that the games that those coaches are there, you play well, because sometimes it can be, you know, one game that he sees.
Hey, Ant, you still there? Nope,
yeah.
He dropped off. All right, so another question I would want to throw at you is, so when you get overseas, it's really different, and you do a good job of letting everybody know how different it is from New York and how just the lifestyle is and everything else. And I always try and tell people, like, when a Russian player comes here, even if he spent a little time in North America, but then he gets thrust into a new environment and he may not have a Russian guy that he can room with, how it's a completely different experience for him to sort of try and get through a season just through the culture, let alone the hockey part of it. And so you experienced that. So if you could just sort of let everybody know how hard that is for when you get to another country and now you have to still be able to focus on hockey, but now everything outside of the rink has just gotten a lot harder because you don't know anything.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you kind of nailed it, because here's the fact. Like, when before I ended up going there, you know, when I found out, okay, I have this opportunity, the first place was in Belgium, all I thought about was hockey and making sure I'm ready to go and I feel good and you know, it's a bigger ice surface, so try to maybe get a little bit better cardio or, you know, stuff like that. It didn't even really cross my mind, you know, people be like, oh, that's going to be a different culture and all this. And, of course, that's, you know, something I thought, oh, it'll probably be fun. Maybe there'll be some foreign girls that, you know, I'll meet. But it never even really crossed my mind, you know, how difficult that transition would be. And, you know, the nice thing, at least, about coming from the U.S., which, you know, you go from the U.S. to Europe, you're going to find people that speak English, because, you know, what you soon find out is a lot of the world caters to, you know, people that speak English, whereas the Russians coming to the U.S., it could be a little bit more difficult. But you know, at the end of the day, the coolest thing about that experience is that you know, when I'm over there, you really have no choice but to just get involved, whether it's, you know, finding a place. I think the biggest thing is getting in a routine, because, like you said, you're only at the rink for a couple of hours a day for practice or games or whatever. So you got to find, you know, to me, it was finding a restaurant that I could go to, you know, every day, try, you know, do stuff that kind of gets you out of your comfort zone, talk to people in the cities and try to, for no other reason than, you know, you got to make friends and, you know, you want to feel comfortable in the place that you're living. So it's got to change, but something that's fun. Yeah.
Apologies, gentlemen.
That's okay.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Bill, was about when you were, I'm sure, and again, apologies again, my line suddenly cut on me, but When you were in Europe, obviously I know you had quite a bit of interesting experience playing for a German league team, I believe, that was close to in the relegation round. What was, again, describe to our audience what that experience was like when you were playing for that team. It was like halfway through the season, I believe, right, when you joined on with them?
Yeah, exactly. It was right after Christmas. It was a team that – basically, they gave me an opportunity. I got hurt when I was in Belgium, had to come back home, and I knew nothing other than it was like an hour from the airport. I didn't have a lot of time to do much research, but this place is maybe one of the most hockey crazy, and still is. I kind of keep tabs on the team. It's the name of the team is EHC Neuwied, and I think that I still have trouble pronouncing it, but. You know, these are, like, some of the most passionate fans. And, you know, it's a smaller city, but that's kind of the big show in town. So, you know, I can remember the first game, they had all these light shows, and the fans are out there chanting, and, you know, half of them don't have shirts on. And, I'm thinking, man, this is – you know, I better do well. Like, this is not a group that you want to let down. And I think that's kind of true for – that's just kind of the culture of, I think, sports overall in Europe. You see it at the soccer games. It's kind of like the biggest events where some people have some understanding of what's going on there. But, you know, there's a lot of drinking. And, you know, it's the first time I saw guys after the game where, in college you have trainers handing out, like, protein shakes and recovery drinks. And it was pretty much, they crack open like a dark beer, not even like a Bud Light. You know, I'm thinking, man, this is going to be – I probably was doing the wrong training when I was back home. I should have been drinking more.
It's almost like a throwback to those old pictures in the 70s where you'd see, like, 40 packs around the goaltender.
Exactly.
Which is obviously your experience.
So, Bill, another question, probably my last one for you, is with the injuries that you have and you're away from home, obviously you can't rely on any doctor you know, and I'm always interested in the quackery and the leap of faith you had to take on some of these injuries with some of these doctors to sort of know what's going on when they're not speaking English and you're basically – your career is in their hands. How uncomfortable was that at times?
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I mean, it's like, it's funny now, but geez, it was not, there's nothing, it was just frightening half the time because, I mean, I knew nothing about, when you get medical terms that I don't even understand in English, you know, what's going on, what's serious, what's not, you know what hurts and what doesn't, but when they're trying to tell you something, and then there's a lot that's lost in translation, and there's, it's not fun to get hurt ever, especially when you don't, know really what's going on. And, for the most part, my experience getting hurt, and it happened, a couple times when I was in Europe, they have their developed countries. So like everybody, was able to make sure I got healthy again, but it's definitely an uncomfortable thing because, it is your career and it's not something that, you want to know exactly what's going on. And sometimes they just can't convey to you, what the issue is. And maybe because they didn't know half the time, but yeah, it's not a fun feeling.
Bill, my last question obviously for you would be, just sort of shifting into, as we're about to get into the NHL playoffs here, I assume you still have your rooting interest in the New York Rangers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How far do you think they're going to get?
I mean, I'd like to think that after a couple, losses in the finals over the past couple of years, they can, they can win the cup. It's, there's certainly, I like the fact that they made a push getting, Eric Staal, and I think Lundqvist always rises to the occasion in the playoffs. Really the X factor is going to be if Nash can, kind of it seems to be like he's the one that has the most trouble for whatever reason in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see. I'd like to see them be playing in June, but.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans feel your pain there, and even though they have 95 points, are sort of scratching their head with the team, and I think you just exemplified that the best way you could too. It's tough. I mean, I always get asked about the team, and I still have no clue what the real team is this year. But listen, Bill, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody should check him out on Twitter at BillKeenan86. The book's Odd Man Rush by Skyhorse Publishing. You did a really good job, and I really enjoyed the book. And thanks for coming on a Friday night.
I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Our pleasure.
All right, Ant, we're gonna stay in the East because unfortunately the West is pretty much decided. Everybody's I think it's an amazing thing. Only one team has clinched in the East.
That's it. It's only the Capitals, and that's it. And the Capitals are so far ahead; they've it's almost slightly lapping the field at this point with 114 points. And it's been pretty. And the second closest team being Pittsburgh at this point, it was 96. That's just how tight this is. Pittsburgh, Washington, New York, the Rangers, Panthers, everybody's in the Islanders all in the 93-point range. You got Detroit, Boston as well. Obviously, Boston just won tonight, so they're over 90 points now. So you got Detroit, and you've got the Flyers pretty much battling there. it's just amazing in terms of it's like Washington and everything else is just an absolute just a viper pit.
there's some big, you're right. It's like a big mosh pit, and we're going to see who comes out. I mean, the Flyers, they can't look past Ottawa tomorrow, and I saw that you put Mark Stone may not play, and so that game doesn't look like it's going to be that hard to win, but it's a Saturday afternoon, and sometimes that's a struggle for the Flyers.
No,
and then Wednesday.
This is your classic trap. This is one of those things where, they can't afford it, but this is your classic trap game here, especially with Pittsburgh coming the following day.
Right. And that's what makes that tough is that they go from that game, and it's not like it's hard to travel to Pittsburgh or anything, but Pittsburgh is just so on it right now, and the Flyers don't really have that same juju that they had in that building before. And I was even asked, today about the Penguins, and I said, look, with the changes they made, they're at least making me believe they're for real enough to go a few rounds for sure in the playoffs if they get the right matchup, where before I just thought their defense was so bad they couldn't do anything. But now at least they're so fast with the puck moving that it definitely covers up for a lot of ills.
That's that, and I think also, again, I've come back to obviously the coaching change with Mike Sullivan.
Yeah.
I think he's brought certainly a little bit of that. And again, when the Malkin injury happened, that almost immediately forced Pittsburgh into making sure that they focused on defense as much as possible.
Yeah.
And to their credit, they're rolling extremely well, about as good as nine of their last 10. I mean, they absolutely just mashed a pretty good Predators team at home. And now all of a sudden they got the Islanders coming up very shortly, obviously, tomorrow, which is going to be an interesting game for the Islanders because the Islanders really are trying to solidify their spot as well. It's a real interesting weekend in that respect. I mean, the Penguins certainly tightened up their personnel-wise. I think the Hagelin deal was huge for them. I really think so. And it's going to loom even bigger now with Perron being out 4 to 6 weeks for the Ducks. Slants the deal. Granted, it's circumstance, but when they made that trade, I was like, ooh, Hagelin on Pittsburgh. That's a very interesting spot. And then, Justin Schultz, I think, has a little bit of a new lease now going to Pittsburgh and not being sort of in the crosshairs like he was before. And again, we discussed, the tale of Justin Schultz ad nauseum from the beginning of his time up right up through his Edmonton, obviously his Edmonton days, not quite fighting, being as good, but they're there right now, Pittsburgh. They're rolling really good, and they're hot as hell at the right time. And again, it's really interesting to see. And again, it's going to be a real interesting weekend with them playing the Islanders and then following it up with the Flyers the following day. It's going to be real interesting.
Yeah, so Ray Emery gets signed. And, you know, first he comes in on a tryout, then he has to clear waivers. And it is always kind of interesting how...
I mean, still got to wait until tomorrow, I believe, to get full official word right on that, because the waivers had to happen today, so they had, I guess they have to wait until tomorrow.
No, said
or
he
that...
signed. I just saw an article that said he signed.
No, they said he signed,
so I think...
but he, I know they put him through. When they signed him, I guess they had to clear. He had to clear him through first.
He had to clear.
Then...
I'm guessing he cleared. I don't think there's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was under the assumption that he, you know, that listen, he's already been on two minor league tryout contracts already.
Yeah.
So
Michael Jello
is telling
us tomorrow at noon is that the official clearing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, yeah, because they had
but nobody's picking him up.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing.
I know, they talk about it on Twitter, and it would be a genuine. No, I mean, you have to say it's there, but it's a matter of course, and certainly it's the. You do go back to the whole Evgeny Nabokov situation when Detroit signed him and then the Islanders snagged him off of waivers.
But to me,
so,
that's different because that's a higher level goalie.
Exactly.
Don't even know if Emery's going to even play in a game.
No, he might not. And again, he's there just as a veteran security blanket, basically. As for right now, if the depth chart is Mason, Stolarz, Emery, that's the way it is, and that's just to get them to the postseason. And again, Emery's only going to be able to play he's only there for the remaining stretch, and then that's going to be
it.
And then the Flyers obviously cross their fingers and hope that Michael Nyberth is ready to go by the time the postseason starts, if they make it.
Yeah, it's a whole crazy process. I mean, with Detroit winning today, they're tied. Flyers have two games in hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're in the driver's seat. But, you know, this time of year, there's no easy games anymore. You don't know what's going to happen from game to game. The spoiler factor has been huge. And even though we do see teams tanking – you know, once in a while these teams pull out a good game, so it's really hard to say. You know, you can't look at the schedule and say, like, anything's easy. And it's funny because I didn't think the Flyers would make it, and they definitely have a lot better chance now, but I'm still not going to turn around and say it's a lock because, like, you would have thought 2 weeks ago it was a lock for the Rangers to have their own destiny in their hands and home ice, and now they don't even have that either.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of this now, in terms of they don't want, you know, try not to slip into a wild card spot here. I mean, I think they probably the Rangers will likely make it. It's just it's been interesting how
because
won't again
have home ice now. That's the thing.
No, they probably won't. And again, that makes it really, you know, a real bear for them. And again, that's one reason why I was asking Bill that earlier to see how far he thinks that they were going to go. And I know
he wasn't 100% confident. He was not.
No, and I'm sure you're probably right now in the same boat because again, if you're staring at the crosshairs of starting a first round series against a red hot Penguins team, that's tough. I mean, let's face it, both this metro. I mean, if it ends up, if things break down the way it ends up here, I mean. If Washington plays Philadelphia and Pittsburgh plays New York, these are two teams that'll just bleed each other white.
Oh yeah,
the only way I could describe it. I mean, it's going to be absolute. Just the Metro division.
It will
playoff
be great to watch. Great
oh,
to
yeah.
possibly cover. Great for the fans. But at the end of the day, when you're trying to make a cup run, you don't want that kind of first round effort to be put out. You just don't. It's not a good recipe.
No, you don't. But again, when you're getting into this anymore, I mean, that's part of the playoff setup now. This is what the league wanted to arrange for first rounds. And let's face it.
There's
it
no
has
more
worked.
Atlanta Thrashers. You know, there's no more Thrashers where you know that you're going to sweep.
No.
Like this.
Exactly. You don't have that salt. You don't have that salt series. And even then, like I said, Florida, if they win the division and end up playing the Islanders, that's a tough series. That's not an easy series to call there. I mean, it's granted. It's
no.
Boston, Tampa plays Boston or Detroit. I think Tampa wins that series. That's one that I feel like I can pick easy. But and Washington and Philly. I mean, if gun to my head, I would say Washington. And I'd probably say Philly can get two games out of Washington in a series. I know
I
people
so
get excited
too. I think
some people are like,
the
Flyers can win that series. I'm saying, yeah, they could, but things have to break really well for them. But they're just – Capitals are just a really, you know, well-loaded team. Now, granted, they're not playing tremendously well right – they're not playing great right now. But that's still that game that you watched last night wasn't their full game.
You know what they did?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I thought they did in that game. They wanted to show a physical element, so they did. They wanted to play keep away. And they did that for a while, so they played keep away for a while, and they showed off their skill. They definitely wanted to win that game, but like when Ovechkin got creamed and he didn't retaliate, you knew that they were not playing at the same level they were going to play at if they met him in the playoffs. Like, that was obvious.
No, yeah, that probably would have, they would have made certain adjustments. And again, they have the, again, and I mentioned this to you before this game, that game was ever played. We had a brief discussion after the Winnipeg game the other night, where I said, I was like, we know that it's, you know, the Caps, if, once they clinch the President's Trophy, you know, they weren't going to play in a way that was, you know, not, they weren't, that's not, they weren't going to play hard, but you always sort of have it in the back of your head that you do have that, you have that home ice in your back pocket. So you don't quite go maybe to the 110th degree that you normally would if you were still fighting for that spot.
Right. I mean, that's definite. And look, right now the Islanders are in a bad way. They don't have Halak. Hamonic's out now for the rest of the regular season, which sort of mirrors what happened to them last year. It's it's a tough spot for them to be in. I still think, this is just me, if I'm Jack Capuano, I got to see what I've got in Berube, because, like, everybody knows what Thomas Greiss is. He's been in this league long enough that he's not rising to the occasion to all of a sudden become this, like, great number one for a short time in the playoffs, where Berube has just never gotten a chance. And I still have this in the back of my mind that, look, I don't think they're getting to the Stanley Cup or anything, but he could be like a Michael Layton, where all of a sudden you put him in and teams don't really know how to play against him. They don't have a lot of tape on him. And at least you've got the unknown. And I think at this point, the Islanders should go with the unknown, because the known is just going to sink them quicker than I think the unknown would.
The only thing with the Layton comparison you do have to take into account is the fact that they went into the playoffs that year, the Flyers, and they had Brian Boucher in that. And then Boucher gets hurt just as Layton is ready to – was recovering from injury, and then that was a short series situation. In terms of riding Berube, I mean, yeah, it's possible, but I do have to sort of use that Layton comparison.
I mean, you could ride him out just for four games to see what you got, right? I mean, that's what I mean.
You
could see if he's worthy.
You could potentially do that. I don't know if they're going to necessarily, because again, when they made the investment in Greiss, so they're going to probably still work with Greiss in this case. And again, amazing how we went to the offseason and the Islanders gave up Neuwirth and and they signed Greiss, and most would have acknowledged and said, yeah, probably the Greiss, at first blush, would be like, yeah, probably prefer Greiss over Neuwirth. And then now we saw what happened this year, and it's like, oh, no, you know, we'd rather have Neuwirth. And it's like, okay, that's easy to say.
I mean,
it's easy to say with summer sunglasses.
No, it is. I mean, it definitely is. But it just shows the craziness of this season. And it's just the Islanders. It's just I feel for their fans a little bit. Look, the Ranger fan in me is always going to not feel that much. But when I cover them and I talk to a lot of the fans, I do feel for them, because, like, this is just, like, the worst time for all of this to happen. And they did just start to put together some offense the other day. So it's just one of those things where we'll see what happens with them. But, man, I mean, they need to get out of the first round. And so far, with everything
that's happening, it doesn't
look good.
I would think a coach. Yeah, I would think if they don't get out of the first round, I would almost be certain that a coaching change is going to happen.
Definitely a coaching change, and could be a complete change.
I'm willing to go with you on the cap change. On a snow change again. I know there's some extenuating circumstances that might make that happen. But at this point right now, I'm probably more likely to put money down on Capuano's tenure coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where we stand. We're gonna be riding out in the sunset here in a minute. But just looking at the way the games went tonight, probably the team that at least helped themselves the most was the Bruins. They needed that win as much or even more than Detroit, because I'm not saying, look, Detroit could easily fall out, but the Bruins were really in a bad way. We'll see if they help themselves enough.
Yeah, I mean, at this point now, again, they briefly lost the hold of the number three spot in the Atlantic, and then they get it back, and Detroit now is sort of back in where, you know, the spot that they were earlier in the evening. We just got to probably just see where they reset here. Should we set the standings here? Because I think I may be on an old set here.
Oh, okay.
Let me see if it's updated. Yeah, at this point now, Boston's been put – yeah, they updated it now. So Boston's at 90 points. So Detroit is once again back at 89 points. just behind, obviously, you know, behind Philadelphia with two games in hand. So the thing I got to look at with Detroit, too, minus 13 differential. We always look at that differential situation.
Oh,
Philly's at minus two. So it's like who looks more like a playoff team right now when we base things on that. And that's,
we'll see in a week.
That's where they're at. Yes, we will. We will see in a week.
We'll see in a week. That's it for Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
I'd wanted to tell Ellie for ages, so I just came out with it. Then she said,
"Don't join the army."
I sat there really calmly and said,
"Don't do what, Elle? Don't leave this place? Don't make a difference in the world? Don't find out what I'm capable of? Don't become a better me?"
Then she gave me this stupid smile. That's when I knew she got it.
To find out how to be a better you, search Army Jobs. Army, be the best.